It's time for Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, another edition of the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. Hello there, Daniel.
Hello, Mark.
Good to have you in studio once again, continuing a discussion on the essentials of a successful marriage. Lots of marriages, but we want to work on the successful marriage. And you already laid out a couple of essentials last time. And why don't you review those? Purpose and vision were two very essential qualities.
That's right. We have to start off with purpose because process follows purpose. And so many times people who are looking for relief in marriage, they come for marriage counseling and they want to fix the process. You know, how can we do things to help us feel better about our situation or to alleviate conflict, these kinds of things? How can we fix the process? You know, can you teach him to communicate better, or can teach her to meet my needs, or, you know, and so, but process follows purpose. And so if we're conflicted in our purpose, if he's going toward one purpose and she's going toward another, they never will agree on how to get there, the process. And the second one is the vision, which is really a process realized or come to life. It's vitalized. It's personalized. Not only a purpose out there, but a purpose that I see a personal path to that purpose, and I'm impassioned about that purpose. That's the vision. I see myself there. It's personalized, it's owned, it's treasured and valued, and it's pursued. And so we said that for the Christian marriage, the vision, my personal vision for my life, has to line up with God's ultimate purpose for life, for the marriage, and I think we also pointed out that marriage has to do with God's one purpose, all-time purpose, and that is to build and perfect the body of Christ. So my marriage doesn't just belong to me. It belongs to God. It belongs to the body of Christ. It has a role in the body of Christ.
And what's interesting, too, the Bible constantly uses the analogy of the body of Christ being the bride of Christ.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So even the relationship of Christ to the body of Christ is kind of a marriage relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I see that as not just aesthetic, but fractal, in the sense that they're both in God's image, and of course they would have to be, because God couldn't create something apart from his nature. He couldn't create something in the nature of some other existence. He has to create in his own nature. So when he creates marriage, that institution is kind of a microcosm of his ultimate purpose, which is the marriage relationship, you know, between.
And that's why our modern notions of what a marriage is are really dangerous.
They're attacks on the nature of God. Yeah, is exactly what
totally.
They are.
And because there's probably no institution on earth that reflects God more than a marriage between a husband and wife. Mm-hmm. And none of these other variants. That's why all these other variables are just a complete mockery of that image of God.
Mm-hmm. And the image of God and the image in which we were created. You know, what image is stamped on this coin? Jesus said, "The image of Caesar." What image is stamped on us? Well, it's the image of God. When we take away his institutions like marriage, we are defacing mankind.
So it's very serious.
And so the last thing that we wound up at, the point we were at following our last program, was that marriage, to entering into marriage, is a commitment to change, a commitment to personal change, not changing the other person. Of course, that's, I think that a lot of times people assume that, and I've even heard people say, and you probably have too, well, I knew there were some rough things in him or her, but I figured, you know, that he would change, or she would change, or we could change this. And I can change him, rather than I can change. Now, I'm not suggesting at all or promoting an idea that if you've got a strong-headed husband or wife, that they're not going to change and you're going to have to make all the change. That's why we started off with the idea of you have to agree on the purpose, because the process follows the purpose. And so this is something that couples— If pre-marriage counseling were to work, this would be one of the things they would have to focus on. What do you understand to be the purpose of marriage? Because it is about change, and change is ineludible. You can't avoid it. It's fundamental and essential to the purpose of God. And marriage, in fact, is the tool for change. I've said before, marriage is a death experience. Now, that freaks people out a little bit. We want it to be a happy time, and it is. But it is death to self, and that's really what life is about. If life is about knowing God and being known of God, then it's about denying myself and taking up my cross. And sometimes marriage is a cross, but that's not that there's something going wrong. I think that I've said in describing some of the marriage counseling that I've been in where people have come in and assumed that the marriage is broken. And so we start talking about why you think the marriage is broken, and they'll describe the situation. And my response wants to be, the marriage isn't broken. It's doing what it's supposed to do. You just need to understand what marriage is supposed to do. This conflict that's come up is a signal for change. Mm. You can't do without change.
And people try to avoid change, and that's
they
where
do.
A lot of these bad habits happen.
Ways that they avoid change and don't realize it. Mm-hmm. One of the ways I've said this, creating a spouse that you can't love, and I think I did a radio show on that sometime back, creating the spouse that you can't love. So these are some of the ways that we try to avoid change. One is in devaluing, and that's a topic in and of itself. What do I mean by devaluing? And I've had people say, well, I don't devalue him or I don't devalue her. It's not that you intentionally devalue, but it's that you don't intentionally value. It's kind of a passive neglect. Mm. I'm not devaluing you. I'm not even thinking about you. So devaluing, another way of devaluing is finding fault. Always finding fault. Yeah, she did it, but, you know, not up to my standards. Or, yeah, he did it, but he always waits until I tell him. Or it's never done completely right. Or she's always late. Or he's insensitive. You know, finding the fault, just pointing at the fault. Always finding something wrong. Moving the goalposts, in a sense. I've seen people do this where, you know, well, I'll be better to her if she'll do this, or I'll be better. And that's another one that I have down here is setting conditions. You must do this. You must say this. You must feel this way. You must think this way. And if you'll meet these conditions, then we'll be fine. It doesn't have to do with me changing. It's, you know, and in fact, I've heard people say, I'll do this if you'll do that. I'll make this change if you'll make that change. Making excuses is another way that people avoid changing. Well, you know, this is the way I am. And it's often assumed entering into marriage, and I've heard people voice this, and certainly overtly or at least implicitly, that's who I am. He or she just has to get used to it and work around that.
You knew I was like this when she married me.
Yeah, you knew I was like this when you married me. But that's me. And I can only be me, and so you just have to find a way to deal with that. So making excuses and assuming that's actually true, assuming that why would you know you married me, you loved me the way I was. Why would you now want me to change? So devaluing, making excuses. Setting conditions. You know, when I said setting conditions, I also had down here setting traps, because setting conditions a lot of times are just ways to avoid the change. That I need to make, mm-hmm. or that the relationship would make, which would require me to make a change. A lot of times, people come to counseling and they talk about change, and I've often heard one or the other. Sometimes I'll meet them one-on-one initially. One will set up an appointment, and then the husband or the wife will come later. And I often hear, I know I'm just giving you my perspective on it, and I'm sure the other person will have a different perspective. So they say that, but obviously if they were okay with that, it would eliminate a lot of the conflicts. If people were if people really believed that, you know, that my side is only one side of the story. Also, distancing, a lot of ways that people distance, and, you know, I've said in before, relationships are psychological and emotional distances. You know, when Jack proposed marriage and Jill accepted, they were agreeing to an intuitive distance, psychological and emotional distance that was modeled for them in their family of origin. So this isn't something that they recognize or know about, but it's something that's intuitive. So Jack grows up possibly not really having a good respect for women. Why would he not respect women? Because maybe his dad didn't, and that didn't mean that his dad was abusive to women. It just means, as I said before, he didn't devalue them. He just didn't intentionally value mom. He just assumed, and on the rest of it. So Jack grows up the same way. He just assumes that he doesn't devalue Jill. He just doesn't bother to value her. Doesn't just look for ways to value her, and so. So why would Jill marry Jack when she intuits that he doesn't really value her? Well, because of the way that Jill grew up and the fact that Jill's dad didn't actively value mom. And if Jill's dad didn't actively value mom, then Jill's mom didn't value herself. That's how those marriages and relationships. So there's a distancing. So we come into the marriage and there's distancing. Now, marriage wants to close the distance. It wants to make us vulnerable, but we don't like that. So we create hobbies, habits. We have personal quirks. You know, burping at the table, which, you know, just things that we do. We think of it, humor can be a distancing behavior, but just things that we do.
Sarcasm.
Things that, tone of voice, belittling the other person when they talk.
There's nothing more uncomfortable to see a couple kind of belittling each other and bickering in the presence of others. Like in the family, you're sitting around at a table or just out with a couple for dinner, and they're just like bickering.
And
it's very
uncomfortable. And it's almost seems as though that when they're doing that, you get the sense that, oh, well, this is the way they are. They're not really hurting. They're just playing. But it's a way of keeping the relationship superficial and not going to a deeper level in it. So hobbies, habits, personal quirks, miscommunication, which I'm going to talk a bit about, talk about communication, and also focusing on differences. People focus on differences instead of also common things. You know, differences should be not on the negative side of the ledger. Differences should also be on the positive side of the ledger.
You're good at this, and I'm good at that.
Yeah, that's your strength, and I need that. Yeah.
So that's a way to put a positive spin on differences. I hear that a lot. We're just too different. What are some of the essentials of a successful marriage? That's what we're discussing this week. Daniel Pryor does a lot of marriage counseling. If you feel like you need some marital counseling, or maybe you know somebody who really does, Daniel would love to help you or that person you know, or that couple you know. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
The phone number is 425-778-6169. 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. You're going to find this and a lot of other podcasts there. I have offices in Kirkland and Edmonds, doing a lot of Skype counseling as well right now.
Okay, back with more of the Sound Mind broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor in just a moment.
Hi, this is Daniel Pryor, counselor and life coach. You know, anxiety and depression contribute to every type of psychosis, behavioral problem, and even many health issues. Unchecked, they can ruin your life. But you don't have to let that happen. If you feel that you or someone that you know is struggling with anxiety and depression, call me and let me teach you the tools to build, manage, and maintain a more wholesome lifestyle. Contact me through my website at BibleBasedCounselor.com or call me at 425-778-6169. Hello, this is Daniel Pryor, host of the Sound Mind broadcast show here on KCIS. Right now, I'm doing a lot of Skype counseling, and this is a great way to get counseling in this time. So if that interests you, give me a call at 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169, or contact me through my website, BibleBasedCounselor.com.
Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. And now your host, Daniel Pryor.
Along with co-host Mark Holland, looking at the subject of the essentials of a successful marriage. If you're married like I am, like Daniel is, we want to have marriages that are successful. And throughout a marriage, I've been married 27 years, Daniel 41, but we both believe in ongoing counseling and help when we need it, a tune-up, as they say. Daniel, you too, I wanted you to maybe describe a little bit of your process in counseling. You do share theories and you listen to where people are coming from, but you're also do some directive counseling too. You do give people things to try and directive. It's not just all theory. There's some real homework to do.
Yeah. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I want to get into is the communication and miscommunication. And I think that counseling, I've seen the counseling session is a great way for people to actually practice this. Now, it's sort of like having training wheels on when you come to counseling, and I've had people, they'll come with, you know, ask, well, how did the week go? Well, you know, we kind of had a problem, you know, and just, well, let's talk about it. And they'll start talking about it, and I just want them to talk it through. And it's interesting, in a very positive way, where because I'm there, they're not going to generally get in an argument. I mean, I've had people really go at it, and I've had to, you know, call off the fight. But for the most part, since I'm there, since they have someone listening, they conduct themselves better in communicating,
and
they
more
actually
civil.
They're more civil, and then I'm able to actually stop them at a place and say, okay, did you hear what she just said? Because I thought that was pretty significant. Would you, you know, could repeat that again and walk them through a process of communicating, because communication obviously is essential to the
solving
of
problems. We've heard that a lot. Communicate. I spell marriage communicate.
Yeah.
Communicate. It's all about communication.
You have to talk about
the problems. There is a failure to communicate.
Yeah. But yeah, so I point things out a lot of times, not always, but a lot of times I'll do a genogram, which is a kind of a family map. And what I'm looking for when I draw out this genogram, I'm looking for distancing behaviors in previous generations, because that has brought us to where we are in this counseling session. So. And a lot of times people will say, we're going to do a genogram, and we're going to do the genogram next week. Is there any paperwork I can do? No, because everyone is different. I'm sort of like a bloodhound. I'm sort of following a
scent. Well, so when you do this genogram, is it almost always, the man is almost always just like his dad, and the woman is almost always just like her mom? Is that what comes out?
Well, there are so many variables, single-parent homes or, you know, absent dad or... It's difficult to say that, and sometimes it just depends
so that
on
be
who,
true,
who's
then.
It wouldn't
like, I'm just you're I'm just saying, like your mother.
It would
you're
be generally like it would be quite often true, but the thing that is always true is that there's a distance. Now, dad might be on the if you could give them like signs, dad might be a plus and mom might be a minus. And that doesn't mean she's less. I'm just, you know, or dad might be an A and mom might be a B. In another marriage, mom might be an A and dad might be a B. The importance, the thing that the person carries on is the distance between mom and dad, not necessarily who played what role.
Yeah, because dad could have been a raging alcoholic, but the son isn't at all. He wants nothing to do with alcoholism.
Yeah. Yeah. But the important thing is what was the distance between mom and dad? So I've had people say, and there was this old kind of a saying that, you know, if you want to know how he's going to treat, Jack's going to treat Jill, look at how Jack treats his mother. Mm. Well, that isn't true. Jack always treats his mother with a degree of deference. The thing is, how did Jack's dad treat his mother? That's how Jack is going to treat Jill, or that's the distance that there's going to be. And so, you know, Jill goes to Jack's house, and Jack is polite with his mother and everything. He's going to treat, where's Jack's dad when he's working, he's a workaholic. Okay. Well, that's more significant. Mm. There's a process there. There are things that they work on. They definitely work on communication. I have articles that I've written that I want them to read. about the, you know, the love triad and communication and personalities and those kinds of things. Because what the how I describe what I do in counseling, whether it's marriage counseling or individual counseling, I want to help the person develop a lens to look at life through. So I want the couple to, I want to help them develop a lens, another way of look. And a lot of that is the biblical perspective. And a lot of it is the forming of personalities. And a lot of it is what we bring from our family of origin and communication styles and why we make choices. Help them get a lens to understand why life is the way it is. And then I think, and the process, and then I think people, if they have those kinds of tools, they can do what I really want them to do, and that is to start fixing the problems on their own.
Who in these scenarios is the more willing participant as far as wanting to go on this journey of exploration? Is it usually just the wife who wants to do this, the husband who does not want to do this, or have you found it's kind of equal?
It's kind of equal.
Sometimes the husband really wants to investigate this stuff and the wife doesn't and vice versa.
So I said equal. Women are, in general, more relational in one sense. They want to fix it, but it's not always that they want to fix it the right way, because I've had a lot of...
They want you to fix the husband.
Yeah. Often it's they want me to fix the husband. And, you know, people need to understand that conflicts in marriage are personality conflicts, and personalities run very, very deep. And and what are they about? And we've talked about personalities being defense mechanisms. So people understanding these things, I think, is really helpful. And particularly if a person will take the information that I give them and personalize it and say, you know, you're talking about me. You're talking to me. That's the first step. And then it's a matter of, well, okay, how do we make change and what kinds of changes do we make? And because I'm just talking about change is essential. So I wanted to talk a little bit about miscommunication or communication in general. And I have a two-part article at my ChristianCounselorsForum.com, ChristianCounselorsForum.com. One of the articles that I give people, and this is an assignment, is this two-part article on communication. We talk about exactly what it is, coding and decoding. But of course, in marriage, we don't just want to exchange data. We want not so much communion or communication as we want communion. We want to feel heard and valued. And, of course, it's reciprocal. I have to hear and value that other person. Miscommunication a lot of times is a deliberate way to distance. You want, Jack wants Jill to climb the hill and communicate on his level, and he's quite sure she can't do that. So that alleviates him of his responsibility to try to communicate with her and vice versa. You see that. So people a lot of times will deliberately miscommunicate or deliberately. Mm-hmm. Is that, somebody said, was that subconscious or conscious? At some level, I think they know. If you're being disingenuous, you know it at some level. Well, you should have said it this way. You could have done it that way.
Or using humor too much. Yeah. At times when we're trying to have a real conversation here and you just keep deflecting by...
Deflecting, good word, because that's another way of just...
Being sarcastic.
Staying distant. Mm-hmm. And I've had in counseling where someone will be, typically in this instance, it would be the woman that's emotional and pouring out her heart, and the husband is thinking, he's kind of, it's going to be okay. Come on,
right.
Mabel.
It's not that bad.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, it's just not that bad. Oh, come on, I was just joking. And there's two sides to that. A lot of times she will be overly emotional, and it could be family of origin things, and he is grown up in a family where where emotions are unimportant. So he marries...
Or they make him uncomfortable.
They make him uncomfortable. So in that family, we don't do emotions. And so why would he marry this emotional gal? Well, because he knows that her emotions, she's too emotional, which gives him an excuse not to validate those emotions. Mm. They don't make any sense. They're over the top, and in part, he's true.
Mm-hmm.
I say to him, it's not your fault, but it's your problem. This is the person that you're supposed to be, that you're instrumental in healing. Mm-hmm. You've got to figure out why she does this and help her to, and she's got to figure out why is he insensitive and how can I bring that about. Now, counseling really helps to point out, you know, ways to do that. Yeah.
Okay, some of the essentials of a successful marriage, and I think we're going to have another show on this next time. So it's a big subject. It's a big part of what Daniel does as a life coach and counselor, does a lot of individual counseling, but also a lot of marital counseling. If you need marital counseling, or maybe you know somebody who's struggling, they need counseling. How do people get in touch with you, Daniel?
Yeah, the phone number is 425-778-6169, 425-778-6169. People also email me through the website, BibleBasedCounselor.com. Office is Kirkland Edmonds, doing some Skype counseling now. I think that's it.
What's that other website, too, that has a lot of your articles?
Yeah, excuse me, ChristianCounselorsForum.com, ChristianCounselorsForum.com. And I mentioned the communication article. You just have to scroll down through the archives and find a lot of these. There's one on the triad that we're going to talk about here coming up in another show here, and a lot of good things.
Okay. Yeah. Always great stuff. Sound Mind Broadcast with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor on KCIS.
You've been listening to Sound Mind with life coach and counselor Daniel Pryor. For more information about Daniel Pryor and his services, visit BibleBasedCounselor.com. Daniel has offices in Kirkland and Edmonds. To make an appointment, call 425-778-6169. Be sure to tune in each Tuesday afternoon at 1 p.m. for Sound Mind with Daniel Pryor.